is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Katrina Vandenhoevel, the publisher and editorial director of The Nation magazine, who can invite us to an event that is upcoming, led by DealBook, that's the New York Times and Andrew Ross Sorkin, about cryptocurrency. But surprising, given the revelations of these last days, I understand bankruptcy court and lawyers and everybody's being cautious. However, Katrina, a very good evening to you. The event upcoming involves the Secretary of the Treasury, former Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Janet Yellen, and the New York Times distinguished correspondent Andrew Ross Sorkin and others. But I'm told that the attendance also includes the man at the center of the mystery, the 30-year-old MIT graduate, Bankman-Fried. And to what extent is this presentation? What are the questions for them? Good evening to you.
John, good evening. I know about this DealBook event because I saw it in the Times. It was advertised in the business section, I believe. And then my colleague had hoped to attend, but it's to capacity. It's Janet Yellen, as you mentioned. I had a chance to see her spokesperson this past Wednesday. And as of then, she said, the spokesperson, that Sam Bankman-Fried of FTX, of crypto world, was planning to attend, I believe, via Zoom from the Bahamas. But you also, you know, have the Treasury Secretary. You have Larry Fink of BlackRock handling trillions. And you have President Zelensky of Ukraine, I assume virtual as well. But still, I don't know if it's focused on crypto. It is focused on the economy at large, the crises confronting the world, the poly crises, the unending endemic economic crises. And that, I believe, is what is at stake in this conversation. But it seems quite a moment as we confront crypto imploding, certainly FTX, and I believe put in charge of kind of making sense of what FTX has done is a man who oversaw Enron. And when Ray, who oversaw Enron, looked at what he was facing, he said he'd never seen anything like this in terms of failed government, corporate malpractice, malfeasance, misgovernance. Now, Janet Yellen, John, as you know, has been traveling. If she hasn't herself been traveling, she's been sending her key deputies around the world to fight for this oil cap, which seems difficult to achieve because of outliers in the EU who continue to want more of a cap or less of a cap. And I don't know where that sits or stands, but that has been a big part of her work. Though it's interesting, about a week or so ago, Janet Yellen was quoted as saying that the global economic recession will end when the war ends, meaning the Ukrainian war, which was underreported, but it is something to contemplate very deeply.
Certainly discord here. Cryptocurrency in the same room as Ukraine's president, in the same room as BlackRock, which I understand, according to early reports, was participating in some fashion in the funding for FTX. And Janet Yellen, Secretary of the Treasury, they don't all belong in the same room, Katrina. But
no, if I were, I'm not Janet Yellen, and I would never be Janet Yellen, and I admire her in many ways, but I wouldn't be in the same room at this time. I don't see the benefit except a scrum that may erupt. I do think it does pose questions. I mean, Andrew Ross Sorkin is an esteemed New York Times economic business reporter. He's also the creator of Billions, the TV series. It raises questions about the New York Times reporting and general reporting on crypto, which has seemed to me has given a pass to a lot of the problems of crypto. So many don't understand it, so have turned away. But, you know, it's going to be a feat of reporting now to untangle what we've learned just the tip of the iceberg about.
To Ukraine, the London Telegraph did us all the favor of publishing photographs back to side by side in black and white. One was 1916, the trench warfare in Belgium and France, with rain piling up in the bottom of the trench and a young person walking through the detritus of the runoff. The other was a photograph exactly the same, 2022, on the edge of the Donbass and fighting in Ukraine. There was another photograph of the splintered trees after heavy shelling on the Western Front. Same photograph from the Donbass. We're looking at a stalemate a stalemate that led to a crisis in 1918, 1919, and a bad peace and the Second War. Are we going in the same direction, Katrina?
John, my grandmother lived a mile away in Belgium from one of the bloodiest trench warfare sites. Europe, of course, has had more history with World War I. We came in late. It is a war that was supposed to end all wars, and instead it, with a lousy peace, as you said, a bad peace, contributed to more war. The barbarism in Ukraine continues with these weapons on all sides, more and more weapons coming in, though there's a cap, it seems, because there's been so much weaponry shipped that some of the countries, it seems, with the exception of maybe Germany, Italy, France, and the Netherlands, countries have no more to ship. I think, again, this past Tuesday at the New York Historical Society, I had a chance to hear from David Rubenstein, who gave an after-dinner talk. He is the co-founder of Carlyle, I believe the largest private equity group in this country. And he had just lent his home to President Biden for the Thanksgiving weekend. He spoke about Biden as not just a second term. He didn't know if that would be the case, but this finishing his term, he saw no more to do in domestic politics, I'm not sure, but he saw foreign policy as the arena. And he said they're working on, you know, ending this war. And he talked about privately about an armistice, which is different than a peace accord. We know it from July, I think, 1953, the North Korean, the DMZ. This would be a UMZ, a Ukrainian demilitarized zone, UDM, UDZ. The brutality now as winter approaches, we've talked about this, and Putin trying to weaponize winter, General Winter, but Ukrainians continue to fight, but there's just a escalating weaponry, and no one seems through the fog of war to know who's up, who's down, if that could in fact be so brutally calculated. So I think we're going to see moving ahead in this country. As the Republicans take over the House, there's already noise of more attention to monitoring the weapons, where they're going. And it's not just Republicans. There's Jason Crow, a Democrat from Colorado. There's, you know, an attempt to almost, you know, just monitor, as was done finally in Afghanistan. But a day in Ukraine is a month in Afghanistan in terms of weapons. But I think there's going to have to, let me just finish and say that Angela Merkel gave an interview to, I think, Die Zeit in the last days about how if she had been in power, this crisis would not have happened, that Poroshenko, then the leader of Ukraine, had no interest at all in the Minsk process, which she was with the French very involved with, the United States was not. But it's a despairing interview, which may have some impact, though she's a former leader.
As a warning to history, the U.S. entering into the first war did not solve the war. The U.S. entering into the Ukraine war, we don't know whether it'll solve it or not, but the record is not strong. So, Katrina, here at Christmas, there's no reason to believe the fighting is going to stop. Do you agree? We have 30 seconds.
I agree. I think that there's a passionate intensity on the side of the Ukrainians that will keep it. But, you know, it's also dangerous as more weapons come in. NATO countries have so far provided some $40 billion in weapons to Ukraine. That's roughly the size of France's annual defense budget. But the more the United States provides, of course, the myth of U.S. not being involved escalates. And that's dangerous for reasons we've talked about. But I do hope there might be some armistice or some talk toward moving to a table so that there is some resolution, not on the battlefield, but at a political table, a negotiating table.
Katrina Vandenhove, the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine. I'm John Batchelor.